This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy and sadness and anger, definitely some disgust, and I think a little fear.
Really?
But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th. Get tickets now.
Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of The Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to The Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into The Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to The Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in The Daily Book Club. I got my bags packed on a roll. I'm heading out there, and I'm ready to go. Looking real good in my passport photo.
Amateur Traveler, episode 405. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about crocodiles and jaguars and toucans as we go to the Pantanal in Brazil. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Before we get into today's interview, I do have one news story for you. Gary Arndt from Everything Everywhere, who's been on the show recently and who is my co-host on This Week in Travel, brought this one to my attention. There's a place that you can go and visit Paris and Venice in the same afternoon, and that is in China. In Sky City, in the coastal province of Zhejiang, China, they have built replicas of Paris and also of Venice, including a 300-foot-tall Eiffel Tower. Now, we're not just talking about Las Vegas-style replicas, but this really looks like Paris and really looks like Venice. You have to go check out the show notes on amateurtraveler.com to find a link to this article and check out these pictures. They are worth looking at. While you're there, you will also find a review of the Tropicana, where I stayed recently when I was in Las Vegas, and thanks to the Tropicana for putting me up in what I think was the nicest hotel room I've ever stayed in. So if you haven't been to the Tropicana recently, check that out. For links to both those stories, check out the show notes at amateurtraveler.com. I'd like to welcome to the show Daisy from Pacifica, California, who's come to talk to us about the Pantanal in Brazil. Daisy, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you for having me.
And since I started this with saying the Pantanal, could you put us on a map? Where are we talking about, first of all?
Yeah, the Pantanal is kind of located in the western part of Brazil, and it extends into eastern Paraguay and eastern Bolivia. It's also south of the Amazon is where I would kind of put the Pantanal.
And what is the Pantanal?
The Pantanal is a basin that it receives runoff from these upland areas. It's also the world's largest wetlands. It's about 10 times the size of the Everglades. And it's really a great place to see different types of wildlife.
And since we've mentioned UNESCO World Heritage Sites in each of, I think, the last three shows, this is, again, a UNESCO World Heritage Site.
Yes, it is.
Now, what made you decide to go here? We're not talking about an area that is just immediately off the thruway.
No, it isn't. It's really off the beaten path. It's not an area that a lot of people are aware of. And the reason we were interested in going to the Pantanal is that my husband and I are really big on wildlife adventure and travel. And we're always looking for a unique destination with great wildlife viewing and encounters. And so when we're thinking about Brazil, of course, most people think when they think about Brazil and wildlife, they automatically think of the Amazon. The problem with the Amazon is that it's a dense rainforest, and so animals are really harder to see, while the Pantanal has more open spaces and marshes, and so it actually allows one to better view wildlife. So even though the Amazon gets all the glory, the Pantanal is really the star when it comes to wildlife viewing.
Excellent. And what kind of itinerary would you recommend for somebody who is going to go down to see the Pantanal? First of all, how do you get there?
There's two ways to access the Pantanal. One is through Campo Grande, which is the southern part of the Pantanal. And usually they have cheaper accommodation and tours. The other part is through Cuiaba, which is the gateway to the northern Pantanal. And the best way to get there is you could fly from Rio, and there's lots of flights there, and you could take a local airlines, which is what we did. We took TAM Airlines. So that's the best way to get there. And we decided that we wanted to go to Cuiaba because that offered the easy access to the part of the Pantanal, which had the largest density of wildlife. And one thing I do want to mention, the other reason why we really like the Pantanal and what really interests us was that it's also home to the highest density of jaguars anywhere in the world.
Interesting. I didn't realize that.
Yeah. And so it provides one of the better chances to see jaguars in the wild. And this is really one of the main reasons for going, because we really want to see jaguars in the wild compared to other places.
And I guess my impression, having seen pictures of the Pantanal, is that you were predominantly going to be looking at avian species and birds.
That's another thing about the great thing about the Pantanal is that you could also see other endangered species, such as the hyacinth macaw, giant river otters, great anteaters, South American tapir, marsh deers. I mean, I can, and then as you mentioned, tons of birds. I mean, there's different numbers that are out there on the internet, but I was reading somewhere that there's like over 550 plus recorded species. And during our trip, I mean, we didn't even come close to that, but we really saw over 50 species of birds, including Jabiru stork is another bird that you can see there as well.
And did you do this independently, or did you have a guide or part of a tour? Or how did you tackle the Pantanal?
Yeah, so when we were researching what's the best way to visit the Pantanal, and we decided to go with an outfitter, since our main objective of the trip was to see jaguars. Mm-hmm. We chose an outfitter that specialized in jaguar tracking and safari expedition. And these tours typically launch at Porta Joffre, which is at the end of a dirt road, which is the beginning of this park called the Meetings of the River State Park, which is where the highest density of jaguars are found. And part of the tour is that we were able to stay in a houseboat deep into the more remote part of the Pantanal.
Okay. I was going to ask, you said launch, and I didn't know what we were launching. Okay.
Oh, sorry. So when I say launch, that most outfitters really start from a river at Porta Joffre. And so from there, the road ends and a river begins, and that's where most Jaguar tours launch from. So that's what I meant.
Okay. So it does seem like it would be a little harder to tackle on your own unless you're going to portage a boat down there and head out.
Pretty much. I mean, there are people who could do it. You could drive down the dirt road and then try to find someone to take you out. But yeah, usually the best way to do this is to arrange a tour through an outfitter.
And I'm assuming you need permits as well to go into what is a protected area.
Yeah, I would imagine. I don't know about it, that part, because I was, like I said, I arranged it through an outfitter.
And then the name of the outfitter, and would you recommend them? Let's start with that.
Yes. The name of the outfitter that I used was called Pantanal Nature. Mm-hmm. And I would highly recommend them. They arranged the access to the houseboat, as well as accommodations in a local lodge that also was along the Transpantanaria Road.
Okay. And then how many days were you with them?
We decided to do a 6-day, 7-night tour. 5 days were on the water at the boathouse, and then 2 days was in a lodge.
And then are the 5 days on the water all the same sort of things, and you just happen to see different wildlife one day than you do the next? Or are there different regions and ecosystems within the Pantanal that you're focusing on?
At the Pantanal, the place that we stayed, it was called the Meetings of the River State Park. And there are three main rivers that make up that state park. One's called the Three Brothers or Tres Hermanos River, which is the great location with the highest density of jaguars and jaguar sightings in the entire Pantanal. And the other rivers are called the Picari River and the Cuiaba River, which is the main river. And from here, a lot of the boats from where we were stationed from the houseboat, a lot of tours just go down one of these three rivers looking for different types of wildlife, as well as trying to search for the jaguar. And the most popular river that a lot of the guides and the outfitters like to go to is that Three Brothers River.
And I should ask, first of all, did you see a jaguar?
Yes, we did. As a matter of fact, we saw a jaguar our first day. We saw three different sightings of a jaguar on our first day.
So you could have just gone home then.
Pretty much. but you're taking your chances because obviously they don't guarantee jaguar sightings. Because as you and I know, wildlife is just very unpredictable. But we decided to maximize our time on the water by 5 days because we really want to see a jaguar and we want to maximize our time there. And knowing how fickle wildlife could be, we didn't want to chance it to just one day and hoping that we'll see it. We really wanted to get the chance to see the jaguar. I mean, that was really our main purpose for going there. So we were willing to spend as much time as possible to make sure that we did able to achieve that.
Now, you mentioned a couple times in your research. So it sounds like you are one of the travelers who does research ahead of time, that is part of the journey. What surprised you after all the research you'd done?
How easy it was to see a jaguar. They were out in the open. I thought most of the time we were going to be hidden in a bush or you're going to see a glimpse of them. But a lot of them were just out in the open, lying on a riverbank or on a beach. Hmm. We even saw one swimming, looking for prey. And they were really unaffected by your presence, it seems like.
Hmm. What did you use for your research?
Mostly the internet and then looking at online guidebooks as well. Mm-hmm. And then TripAdvisor, obviously, it was another source of my research. And then just kind of on forums and so forth, just to try to get away from the guidebook's views and get more of a real person view of what was going on down there.
And now that you have been there yourself, are there things that you would suggest people do differently from the guidebooks recommend or do differently than you saw on TripAdvisor or in the forums?
I would definitely try to split my time between the houseboat and then just staying at the local lodge. Mm-hmm. And a little more evenly, because when we stayed on the houseboat, like I mentioned, we spent 5 days there and then 2 days at the lodge. And the lodge also had a lot of variety of wildlife and opportunities to see different types of wildlife. Like when we stayed at the lodge, we saw a toucan and tapirs and peccaries. And so we probably would have split it up a little more evenly.
Okay. And I'm going to have to look up peccary because that one I am not doing from memory.
They look like a pig. They're very related to pigs.
Okay, related to a... And a tapir is similar to a pig also, is there?
Or a horse is what I've heard at one point. All right. Yeah. All right.
Can you paint a mental picture for those of us who aren't looking at the enhanced version with pictures of what the pantanal looks like?
The pantanal I would describe as waterways, bunch of rivers, mm-hmm. lowland marshes with riverbanks and brush. And that's how I would kind of describe it.
So not a lot of trees?
There's some trees, but they're low. I mean, they're not very high trees.
So you can see off into the distance more.
You could see off in the distance more. And then, like I said, there's a lot of marsh. So when you go through the boats, you see a lot of vegetation that surrounds you and like riverbanks and so forth.
Okay. And when people describe an Amazon experience, they describe things that can bite you and eat you and be careful where you swim in the water because of piranha and things like that. Is that a very different experience than the pantanal experience?
Well, there are piranhas out there, but we didn't really worry about that as much. And there are anacondas. I did not have a chance to see anacondas.
It's not the one you see that's dangerous.
But our guy kept trying to look for one for us, and we were excited, but unfortunately, we didn't get a chance to see one. And there are also other very dangerous snakes. And as a matter of fact, the opportunity that I worried about was when we were back on the lodge and we were doing a bushwalk. And that's where I was more worried about it when I was on foot when we were doing a hike around the lodge and so forth.
So the first 5 days, you're really staying on the houseboat or on smaller boats going out from the houseboat?
What a typical day consists of is that you stay on the houseboat. That's your main accommodations during the time that you're deep into the park. And from the houseboat, you take a skiff. Okay. And then the skiff takes you through the different rivers searching for different types of wildlife.
And we say skiff, we're talking about a flat bottom?
Yes, pretty much a shallow
watercraft.
Right. And they have different various sizes of skiff depending on how large your tour is. It was only the two of us and our guide, so our skiff was pretty small.
Okay.
A typical day would consist of every morning, afternoon, we would head out in a small boat searching for the jaguars and other wildlife along the river. We'll get up, have breakfast, 6 to 6:30. We're on the skiff with our guide and our boat driver searching for jaguars and other wildlife along the riverbanks. And then the guide and boat driver will keep in constant contact with other boats for sightings of the jaguars. Then we would go back to the boat, have lunch, take a nap, head out again around 2 p.m., go out more, searching for more jaguars, more wildlife, come back to the boat around 5 p.m., and then dinner at 7 p.m. So that was pretty much a typical day out on the water.
And of the people that you had to interact with, who's the most memorable person that you met, local?
Our guide. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was extremely knowledgeable. He was really excited, and he was really into photography, and he just knew how, like, he could look at birds and give you the whole background on them as well, and just kind of tell you just from a distance what type of bird they were. Mm-hmm. And he was just really interesting to talk about because he was really also into photography, which is something that we were interested in. And so he was able to give photography tips and so forth.
And some wildlife tours tend towards the expensive end, and there are other ones that are more locally run that are inexpensive. It sounds like you're describing something that's a little, save up your pennies for this one.
Definitely save up your pennies for this one. I think you've been on a safari, but this was much more expensive than a safari. And I really don't know why, what the logistics are or what they have to bring in or so forth, mm-hmm. but it's definitely something that you have to save your pennies for. And I got that is for sure. So it's not for everyone, obviously.
Well, and what I learned with safaris is that how much you pay depends a lot on where you book. So for instance, we did a local booking. So we did 2.5 days of safari for about $300, so only about $100 a day, which included accommodations in a lodge, where I know other people will spend, five times that amount if they're booking from the U.S. Talking to people booking on the internet or things, that can be a lot more expensive. So do you know if this is the same sort of thing that you could have saved money if you're willing to risk it and get all the way down there and then find out whether there was somebody who would guide you, or is that just really not worth trying?
Well, I think there's other ways to experience the Pantanal, which is slightly cheaper. You could book directly at one of the many lodges, which offer accommodation, foods, and activities, such as bushwalking, fishing, horseback riding, night drives, and boat rides in the adjacent river, and you still have a good chance of seeing a jaguar and different types of wildlife. But because we really want to see a jaguar, we decided to choose a tour that specializes and allowed us to stay deeper into the Pantanal, I think it became really expensive because of that.
Got it. So the houseboat stay versus the lodge stay, for instance.
Exactly.
Okay. Exactly. Excellent. So you're standing in the most beautiful spot that you saw on your whole trip. Where are you standing and what are you looking at?
This was on when our stay in the lodge, they were adjacent to a river called the Rio Claro. Mm-hmm. And we were coming back from a boat ride during sunset. And we're just driving down while the sun's going down. And then out in the distance, you see a tapir swimming and going across the bow of your boat while it tries to go across to the other side of the bank. I think it was a very beautiful setting to see that, to be on that river while the sun was setting.
Excellent. So sometimes when we talk about explorers going deep into the countryside or deep into the jungle, they see animals they're not expecting. Was there a moment that you saw some sort of animal and you thought, they are making that up, that can't possibly be real?
The tapir is definitely one of those animals that look like they're making up. I don't know if you've ever seen one, but they're really strange looking.
And again, I don't even know what they're related to exactly.
They have like a bump in their head or like a snout, but then it has kind of a bump. I can't really describe it.
But they're decent size, bigger than a large dog, smaller than a horse.
Yes, they're pretty big and they're pretty dense animals, actually.
And do you happen to speak Portuguese? And did you have any trouble getting around if you don't?
I don't speak Portuguese. Okay. I try to take a 2-minute lesson on that just to help me get by. My husband does speak Spanish, so there is some crossover there. Mm-hmm. But even he had problems because of the way they pronounce things. And then they're also speaking really quickly, so he couldn't follow through very well.
And speaking a different language.
Well, yeah, but there are some things that are shared, right? There's some similarities between the two languages, but it still didn't help him that much. It helped him a little bit, but not that much. And so as long as you stayed kept close to the tourist areas, you were fine with English. But there was a lot of times where Portuguese was spoken, even in some like real touristy places that we were surprised at.
Okay.
But little hand waving and little charades.
Tourist charades always work.
Always works. And pointing and grunting.
One thing you should remember to pack before you head to the Pantanal, besides your binoculars and your telephoto lens.
Your bug spray.
Sure.
Yeah, that's always one. And patience, because we were out on the water for 5 days. And after spotting your jaguar and then you keep going out and doing the same thing, it gets a little monotonous. Mm-hmm. And so after the fourth day, we were kind of done. Okay. He said, all right, let's do something else. and so forth. So I would kind of say that in your patience, because you're not always, there are going to be stretches of time where you're not going to see a jaguar or some interesting mammal. You're going to see the same caiman that you always saw. So I would definitely pack that.
Okay, excellent. Before I get to my last three questions, is there anything else that we should know before we head out to the Pantanal? It was worth it?
Oh, it was definitely worth it. You felt like you were in a different part of South America, which not a lot of people really know about. Every time I mentioned the Pantanal when I was talking about where we were going, people were like, huh? So it meant, which was a good thing, right? Mm-hmm. So it meant that we were going to an area that was still relatively undiscovered.
Okay. One thing that makes you laugh and say only in the Pantanal.
Huh. You hear over the radio about sighting of a jaguar. All of a sudden your boat driver starts gearing up the engine and seeing off to an area where the jaguar was sighted. You start approaching, you see four other boats waiting, and everyone's waiting and looking bored because they see a jaguar, but he refuses to show himself. So that always cracked me up.
Excellent. Finish this sentence. You really know you're in the Pantanal when what?
You see other boats racing around you, and they're going somewhere, and they all stopped because they all saw a jaguar, and they're all staring at the jaguar.
Excellent. And if you had to summarize the Pantanal in three words, what three words would you use?
South American safari.
Excellent. Well, thanks so much, Daisy, for coming on the show and sharing with us your newfound love for wildlife and for the Pantanal.
Well, thank you, Chris, for having me.
In news of the community, I had an email a couple weeks ago from Tina. And Tina said, hello, I stumbled across your podcast recently and I'm really enjoying it. I'm a homeschool mom of two. And since I grew up all over the world, my dad was in the Navy, I've always wanted to take my kids to see more of the neat things I've seen and places I've lived, but can never seem to find the time or money to sort out how to do it. I think your podcast is going to be a great help in that regard, especially since you have covered so many destinations I have on my list of places to go. So thanks for that. I was wondering if you'd done anything on educational destinations with kids, especially in the U.S. Immediately, what sprang to mind, I think, were educational value of a trip would be historical destinations like Colonial Williamsburg, Virginia, and Plymouth Plantation, Massachusetts. I've also heard there are Laura Ingalls Wilder's locations, and I imagine there must be places to see and learn about parts of the Underground Railroad. Also off the top of my head, I think there would be NASA tours or other science-related trips, music/musician destinations, birthplace of jazz, Kitty Hawk, art-related tours, famous artists' homes, famous architects like Frank Lloyd Wright, just things off the top of my head. And I wrote back to Tina, but I thought this was a great question. We have covered a number of those things on the show. There is an episode on Colonial Williamsburg, which we did a number of years ago, but Colonial Williamsburg hasn't changed a whole lot. I don't believe we've talked about Plymouth Plantation yet or Laura Ingalls Wilder destinations. Underground Railroad, there's a new Underground Railroad Museum in Cincinnati, but we have not yet done it on this show. There are definitely NASA tours. I believe there are NASA tours in both Cape Kennedy and in Houston, but we again have not talked about them in this show. We have done a show on Kitty Hawk. We have talked about the Outer Banks of North Carolina, and there's at least one article on the blog about Falling Waters, the Frank Lloyd Wright designed house. There are apparently many things that we have not yet talked about in Amateur Traveler, and I say this because we're always looking for people to come on the show and bring us their destinations and their travel stories. So keep that in mind. You might be the person I'm looking for. We're going to wrap up the show with that. There is a discussion going on the Facebook community about a possible Amateur Traveler trip. I would love your feedback with that. I am serious about doing a trip, probably starting with a fairly small group trip sometime in the later half of this year. So if you're interested, either drop me an email or find that conversation in the Facebook community. With that, we're going to end this episode of The Amateur Traveler. If you have any questions, feel free to send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com or leave a comment on this episode at amateurtraveler.com. You can also follow me on Twitter at Chris2X. If you don't know, we also have an Amateur Traveler app in the iTunes App Store, and some people find that the easiest way to get the show. As always, thanks so much for listening.